And we were just walking and talking with all these guys, and Dan and I kind of connected on breath. And I walked up to him after his talk, which was, by the way, outside in sunny California. It was amazing. And Dan, I told Dan, I said, just something with my breath. It's like, I can't, when we did these kind of hyperventilation exercises, and I couldn't really take enough air in. I felt like I was all tightened up in the chest. And he said to me, look at me. And he can just kind of touch my jaws here. And immediately when he touched my jaws, I just started crying like crazy. I was like, what the heck? Wow. What did you do to me? And he said, yeah, you're super tense there. I mean, let's not go into it now, but there's you need to relax. You need to really focus on triggering your kind of parasympathetic state a lot more and get into that mode, because you are so tensed that you need to loosen up.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm your breathwork coach and host of Breathcast. And my job on this channel is to bring you the world's top breathing and wellness experts and have a conversation, understand their tips, tricks, techniques and backstory, and bring you something where we can both learn together. Maybe there's some different things we could do to help improve our health, our well-being, our mindset. So today's guest is Martin Kremer, and he is from Denmark, and he is a biohacker. Now, I've had 3-4 biohackers on this channel so far. Basically, it's people that look for different opportunities to improve their health. And that term biohacker has different feelings to different people. However, that being said, breathwork is considered one of those core staples of biohacking. So we may not all resonate with that term, but if we're here together talking about breathwork, we're hacking our breath maybe in some way. Hack's obviously not the most wonderful word in the world, but we're optimizing our health using breathwork. So Martin's a big advocate of breathwork. He also runs My Health and High Performance Tribe. And I'm going to link to that below. Martin's a really charismatic, just lovely person. I think you'll get a lot from this one because it's really practical. Because what I'm always looking for when it's speaking to biohackers and of such is not the what can you do for $1 million for your health. It's what can you do that's free that is going to improve your health. And often, time and time again, I've spoken to several people in this field now, it's the free stuff that tends to make the biggest difference. Putting your feet onto some ground, onto some soil, you know, getting some nice daylight onto your skin, doing free breath work routines, you know, all those different things. And Martin talks a lot about that. He shares a wonderful mindfulness trick about his morning routine and coffee, you know, just simple things which I've taken and go, oh, I'm going to do that. And I have started doing that. So I won't give too much away. I'll let you enjoy the actual Breathcast with Martin himself. But yeah, really, really lovely person, and hopefully a big value add for you on there. So yeah, enjoy the Breathcast. Just a couple of quick messages from me. If you're not doing so already, please follow us on Instagram. It's takeadeepbreath.co.uk. And we've got loads of content coming out there. It's a really nice community that's growing now, up to about 1,500 people on there. So it's slowly, slowly growing. And also my second channel, Binaural Beats Unleashed. If you haven't done so already, and you could just pop over on YouTube and hit that subscribe button. I'm working with a number of different artists to bring really lovely music completely for free. And that music can be used for meditation, mindfulness, yoga, free form breath work, study and focus, and a whole host of other things. So, you know, while I'm working on the breath work course, which I've spoke about numerous times now on this podcast, I'll often just go onto YouTube and type in binaural beats for study. And, you know, certain frequencies apparently help us get into a better state. So I'll pop that in and I'll just sit and work for several hours and know that I'm not going to get interrupted with some rap music or something else. You know, it's that steady, constant stream of music. It's great for sleep as well. So more content is coming out a couple of times a month. So if you could pop on over to Binaural Beats Unleashed, there'll be a link below. I would really appreciate that. We want to grow that community. And it's just another way for us to connect and to hopefully give you some great value as well. Anyway, without further ado, I just want to say very quickly, thank you so much for being with us. We're 100,000 plus subscribers now, which is crazy. And I just want to say a big thank you. I'm really grateful for you as an audience, and my plan is to keep bringing you massive amounts of value and content. So I hope you enjoy it. Leave us a comment below if you are enjoying this. And without further ado, let's get stuck into today's Breathcast with Martin Kremer, our biohacker friend. Cheers. Take it away.
Let's take a deep breath.
That's it. Okay.
Cool.
Okay. Good morning, Martin. I've hit record now. I can see you're at a standing desk. So we're just straight into biohacking. I am at a standing desk, but I'm currently sitting. You've just shamed me. how are you feeling today, sir?
I am feeling great, thank you. And you, sir? How are you?
Yeah, good. Really, really excited to talk with you. I know we had a quick chat a couple of weeks ago, so really excited to get stuck into the world of biohacking with you. I guess my first question is always, how would you define biohacking? What is it to you?
Oh, that's great. And there's so many good ways to explain it these days. And I think every biohacker probably have their own little version of it. But in my mind, what I keep coming back to is that it's about taking control over your health. It's about managing what you can manage, which is a vast set of tools around you, right? And things around you, because everything we do outside our bodies impacts our bodies inside us, right? So it's like biohacking to me is that art of balancing life, right? And balance is a big thing for me. So I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But I think at least here in the Nordics, where I'm from in Denmark, biohacking is very much founded in nature as well. It's the basic things. So, you know, it's probably less of the American style where it's all about, you know, peptides and gadgets and whatnot. It's very basic actually, but you can achieve a lot just with that.
That's perfect, actually, because I think myself included, as well as the audience, we've had people on that have spent millions of pounds on biohacking, and just for the most of us, that's just not realistic. So it's quite interesting to unpack some of that with you. So do you prefer the term biohacking, or is there a different term that kind of represents what you've just summarized?
Well, we often talk about it as Nordic biohacking, but I don't mind whether people call it one thing or the other. I think what matters to me is that if something can be a magnet for dragging people into a better lifestyle where they take control over their health, and as I keep talking about, becoming CEOs of their own health, right? Then I think it doesn't really matter what we call it. I think biohacking is a term that at least inspired me many years ago, right? And it's kind of a word that's filled with curiosity. So from that perspective, I do like it, but I also spend a lot of time arguing with media and whatnot about, you know, how it's also pushing some people away and how it's too kind of conservative. And there's a whole bunch of things you can say negatively about biohacking. But I think in its root, when it comes to using tools and technology and, you know, testing and everything we can find to recalibrate our life for the better, I think, you know, biohacking certainly describes that well.
Yeah. Oh, I find it such an exciting time because never have we had this much data, analytical tools where we can actually look at our kind of flesh suits and go, right, what can we do to make them a bit healthier, a bit better? We know cigarettes is definitely bad now, and there's all this information out there about so many different things. So, okay, no, very exciting. So I guess what's always interesting for me and the audience is, how did you get down this route? What was your path to biohacking?
Well, I think it's the classic in many biohackers' life that you sometimes have to hit a wall before you realize that you're going too fast, right? I guess I was lucky. I never really hit the wall entirely. I had a very physical reaction to what was probably a burnout situation, which I'm slowly realizing, kind of still now discovering what I was actually doing to myself, you know. But this started way back in 2012, 13, when I was traveling the globe, which I continued to do many years after. But, you know, I was just physically, you know, I wasn't minding my body whatsoever. I was living the life that any, you know, consultant would do, or at least many consultants at the time they were doing. So it was just, you know, fatigue. I had a rash here on my head. I had way more hair back then than I had, because I had to grow hair to actually, you know, hide away all the scratches I had in my head. And I was constantly tired. I was jet lagged. And, you know, I thought I should just get out of bed every morning in my hotel and run 10 kilometers and, you know, go hit the bar at night and have fun with my colleagues and drink some Red Bulls and do the rest, right? And it worked well for a couple of years, but then not so good. But mentally, and I'm super pleased that mentally I stayed strong. I know a lot of people, unfortunately, who have a burnout that's more mentally driven than physiological driven. And, you know, it can be even worse, actually. But that was how it started for me. So, and biohacking was a coincidence. It was
okay.
A random radio interview from South by Southwest where Dave Asprey was interviewed, I think, probably before he was even known, or at least he was very new. And it was 2011 or 12. And I just like, that's interesting. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So it comes back to that wounded healer story again, doesn't it? Where you had to fix yourself first. And then I think Tony Robbins says it really nicely. You got to put the gas mask. If the plane's got a problem and the air pressure drops, you've got to put the gas mask on yourself first before you can help the people next to you. So, Absolutely. All right. And so Dave Asprey, God, 10 years ago as well. Yeah, so that's proper early days, isn't it, for all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it took me quite some time before I started to actually talk about, you know, what I was doing and how I felt and everything. I mean, obviously it took me only a couple of months after following what was back then very popular as the Bulletproof Diet, or it became the Bulletproof Diet. It just took me 2 months and I was back in like full swing. Like, you know, I'm sure I had to recover a lot of my nervous system and I'm still balancing that, right? But after 2 months, I mean, my rash went away. I had an ulcer that was medicated for 2 years, dropped the medicine. So everything just started working out really, really well for me. And from there, it's been quite a journey. So,
wow. So can you talk us through those steps then, just ever so lightly? So you hear Dave Asprey and then you start to make some tweaks to your own life. What are some of the things that you changed?
Well, for one, it was my diet. As I said, I was eating whatever. I mean, I love croissants and I still do, and I still enjoy them.
Me too.
But I eat them maybe twice a month now, where I ate them twice a day back in the day, right? So I knew all my croissant places and I would go there every morning, and it was my kick, and I had my big latte, and, you know, there was just, I never really tested intolerant for anything, but still you can be slightly intolerant, and that's kind of what's going to unbalance your body if a lot of other things is wrong with you. For instance, you're too fatigued, you don't sleep enough, you're tired, you're working out in the wrong way, and whatever it may be. So for me, it was just the diet fixed so many things. It's unbelievable. As they say today, you can't really exercise your way out of a bad diet, right? That's so true. So that was the first thing I did. And then, as I said, I was just living the typical life, right? And we had this I'm working for an amazing company with an amazing team, and we were good friends, and we kind of kept each other up by saying, okay, let's go to the gym this morning. We had hangovers, doesn't matter, let's go to the gym. So you're just kind of grinding yourself down slowly. And I realized that was what I was actually doing. I wasn't actually recharging my batteries with any of those activities. I was doing the exact opposite. When I realized that and I stopped actually exercising while I was traveling, I just started walking instead, and I prioritized my sleep and I started to do some yoga, and it's just, I totally shifted my mindset around to be more balanced, and that was it.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it? Because you watch Rocky, for example, and he's up at 4 a.m. and he's, you know,
going
he's running.
For a run and
and so that gets into your head, and you think that's if I'm going to get fit, I have to get up really early and you know, sacrifice the sleep. And I went through that shift. And then it was Dr. Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep, where I was like, okay, so I need to prioritize sleep more. Okay, so diet and sleep were two big ones for you then, and the balance and the yoga. Okay. And I know we're going to get onto this today at some point anyway. So let's talk a bit about breath work at this point. So what's been your experiences with the breath?
Profound. That's the best way I can describe it. I really, you know, breath work for me was something that came about in 2015. So a couple of years after this, and obviously through yoga, and my wife was trying to teach me how to do yoga, and I was kind of reluctant because I thought I was too girly, I'm not going to do yoga. But, you know, I eventually said, okay, let's do it. So we went on a which I can recommend for any of you dudes out there, that there are awesome yoga surf retreats in Portugal. So my wife and I went there with a friend in 2013. And that was my first experience with yoga and breath work. And it was a whole week of yoga in the morning, surf class, yoga, surf class. And then it was just 7 days and you were bummed, right? But that was my first experience. Then fast forward to 2015, where I met Dan Brulé, who I know you've interviewed as well. I was at this amazing, it was kind of like a seminar, you could call it, or a conference called the Unbeatable Mind Academy with Mark mm-hmm. Divine in San Diego. And you know, a lot of awesome people, Ben Greenfield, and, you know, as I mentioned, Dan Brulé and Bob Schulz and Rob Wolf and all those, you know, really cool cats, they were there. And it was a really unique little group, like 50, 60 people for like 3 days. And we were just walking and talking with all these guys. And Dan and I kind of connected on breath. And I walked up to him after his talk, which was, by the way, outside in sunny California. It was amazing. And Dan, I told Dan, I said, just something with my breath. It's like, I can't, when we did these kind of hyperventilation exercises, and I couldn't really take enough air in. I felt like I was all tightened up in the chest. And he said to me, look at me. And he can just kind of touch my jaws here. And immediately when he touched my jaws, I just started crying like crazy. I was like, what the heck?
Wow.
What did you do to me? And he said, yeah, you're super tense there. I mean, let's not go into it now, but you need to relax. You need to really focus on triggering your kind of parasympathetic state a lot more and get into that mode, because you are so tense that you need to loosen up. So he gave me a few tricks for that, which was all about just kind of massaging your cheeks here and just kind of loosen up in your jaws. Mm. And after that, I felt like I could take a full breath of air in for the first time.
Wow.
And so obviously I started to look into all the work that Dan's doing. And I later on invited him to Copenhagen. We had an awesome session for like 2 hours. He was talking for 80 people in Copenhagen. I was just, he's an amazing guy. I was blown away by his work. So
yeah. I'm a little bit in love with Dan, and he's he's,
I think everybody's got a little bit of a cross with that man.
Yeah. Oh, I could just talk to him for hours and hours and hours. 40 years of breathwork experience is
amazing.
There's nobody else like it on the planet that we know of. Can you just talk us through that? Because it's funny you should say that. I did a podcast just a couple of days ago. It hasn't gone out yet, with a breathwork instructor from the UK. And she trained with Dan. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about massaging the jaw as well. And before this week, I'd never heard of that. And both of you have just mentioned that. So can you share anything about what you're doing there? Is it just rubbing it? Is it a specific technique?
You got to find the most painful point here, mm-hmm. right around your... whatever those are called, up in your door, right? And then you just really got to gently massage that to make sure that you're kind of relaxing in your jaw muscles. Right. And that's it. I mean, obviously he had some ninja tricks, I'm sure. I'm not sure what exactly he did.
Yeah.
Which later on I went to a kind of physiotherapist who's also working with breath work and energy management, etc. It's something called Body SDS here in Denmark. I don't think actually it's not an international education or term, but it's something. It's kind of a hybrid between physiotherapists, breath work, and what I would call Chinese energy medicine, basically, mm-hmm. Which is now a proper education over here, which is amazing. And cool. Anyway, I went to one of those. Practitioners there, and she taught me as well that it was a lot of points up in your mouth. So when I went there, she was massaging my gums and my kind of my palate and everything.
Yeah.
And I had the same reaction. There are so many probably traumas from childhood or whatever that's kind of just built up in there, and it's immediately you start crying. You can't help it. It's not like you feel sad. You just, you know, it's something comes out, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that was pretty profound. But with Dan, it was just he just basically for 5 minutes massaged me here, and that was it.
Wow. I know people call him the Bruce Lee of breath, but I think of him of like the Yoda of breath when it comes to this sort of stuff. Yeah.
Or Gandalf.
Yeah. And just, sorry, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but are you massaging behind the jawline or all over?
Yeah. Well,
after the jawbone kind of here?
Right there, it's for me. That's, I mean, yeah. If you just put your finger there, you'll feel how painful that is, right?
Yeah.
That's where he taught me to.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's fascinating, isn't it? Isn't it amazing that, you know, you wouldn't even consider the jaw to be, you know, kind of that link to taking a deep breath? That's, now, talking about that, so I don't know if you've probably come across James Nestor and the book Breath, and he's got a whole chapter dedicated to chewing. So have you done much when it comes to your chewing routine?
I have not, I gotta admit. No. I haven't, but I'm sure I've got something to learn there.
Yeah, there's a guy called Anders Olsen, and I forget he's up in the Scandinavian way. I don't think he's from Denmark. I forgot where he's from now.
Yeah.
He might be Sweden. Yeah, I think he's in Stockholm, and he's got some little devices that have got little springs in. They're kind of a clear plastic, and he chews with those.
Yeah.
It's fascinating stuff. And I think James Nestor was able to change the structure of his middle-aged face, he said, just by doing a proper chewing routine. So again, it's the jaw, because I'm sure you've heard about people that mouth tape at night to kind of force a nasal breath. Well, I don't even have that problem because I'm so clenched here, I don't open my mouth. So I'm always looking at different ways of, can I chew my food properly? But I hadn't ever considered the jaw massage. So as you're the second person now, that's given me something deep to go into. Cool. Okay. So Dan Brulé, breath, jaw work, anything else that you've done with breath? Do you tend to go with there's kind of two schools, isn't there? There's breathe less than you need or breathe more than you need. And there's also functional breathing, I guess. Do you play around with all kind of three areas?
Well, a little bit. I also spent some time with Wim Hof in London. He had this big event there a couple of years ago that I signed up as a volunteer just to kind of get to know his team and get to know, you know, what was this thing all about. Obviously, I've been trying his methods for years. So to answer your question, I mean, I'm all about breathing less. I totally get that. And I'm practicing it every day. And I will say, it's about 2 years ago when I changed my running routine. So, I mean, kept running the way I've been running for 6 years now, which is like, you know, interval HIIT runs basically. So I changed it to nasal breathing only, which I've been doing for years, but I started to close my mouth because I used to be breathing in through my nose and out through my mouth. And I changed to just close my mouth when I'm running. And initially it was very hard for me, but what I realized after just a couple of runs, I felt more energized. I felt like it was just, I could run faster. I could run harder. It was just weird. I can't really explain it, but, so that's, I'm all about that. But then also I'm all about rhythms. So when I go through my day, I tend to not count my breaths, but I'm really trying to be mindful of, you know, slow breathing. I start every morning with a bit of a mindfulness practice, doing the dishes. Actually, that sounds really odd, but you know, a lot of people think they need to sit down and be very quiet and everything. I do that too sometimes, but often or most mornings, it's like brewing my coffee, cleaning up the kitchen, and very mindful, very slow breathing, really practicing that, you know, as little as I can breathe. I do that. I'm just trying to be calm all the time, really.
Yeah, that comes back to the balance that we spoke about at the start. Yeah. No, I love that. Can we dig into your morning routine a little bit more then? Because that's what I'm always fascinated. And then maybe we can talk about your bedtime routine as well, because those two things, they're so interesting. So what, talk us through it. So you wake up, and is it straight into the kitchen to clean? What do those steps look like for you?
So to go into details, obviously you jump out of bed, you go to the loo, you know, I brush my teeth. I go into the kitchen. I have this, water system thing that I put on a cup of water. That's basically, hydrogen water machine basically. Okay. So I put that over, it takes about 5 minutes. And while that's running and kind of prepping my morning drink, if you like, which is a huge glass of water with probably a gram or two of Himalayan sea salt and some apple cider vinegar, just a little splash of that. I prep my supplements. And as I said, that's there, that's ready, waiting for the water to be finished. And then I usually just like clean the table. If it's not cleaned from the night before, usually it is cleaned, but like sometimes I just leave stuff in the sink just so I have something to do in the morning. And I just kind of put that in the dishwasher, be very mindful activities, right? And then once that is cleared, I drink my water, I turn around and I start prepping my coffee, which is a very nice big, you know, kettle of pour over coffee, very slow brew. And I do it in a very mindful way. I'm actually watching the water leave the little tip on my kettle and just kind of into the freshly ground beans and everything. To me, that's just, I wake my day like that. So then I brew that coffee, which is a kind of a manual effort. And then, you know, after that, I drink my coffee, go into the office, which is where I'm at now, which right over there, we got our yoga mat, and most mornings I will lay down and I will just do at least one sun salutation, which is a bit of a hybrid between a proper yoga style sun salutation and a little bit of a warrior yoga type thing. So a little bit more active yoga, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I end up doing roughly 10 minutes of that. And depending on what my day schedule looks like, roughly three times a week, I will sit down in front of my red light panels and just kind of absorb all the energy I can get from them while doing Wim Hof, when it's about 10 minutes. And then I glide into meditation after that. And so that's my ideal morning routine. Some mornings I don't do that part. I just go straight from the yoga stretching session to focus work, basically.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting, because I look at the dishes and the dishwasher as a waste of time that I've got to get through as quickly as possible. Whereas you've just given me a new perspective on it, which is enjoy it and use it as a practice. I was talking to, there's a breathwork coach called Alan Dolan, and he's worked with a lot of celebrities when it comes to breath and and he was talking the other day about cloud watching and just the benefit of just watching the clouds, just because it's a pointless activity. Yeah. And there's no goal at the end of it. And so again, it's hearing people talk about these things, because I think we're in turbo mode too much and we're rushing through and actually let's enjoy. And the pour over coffee, is there any benefits to that? Or is it a nice flavor? Is there any biohacking benefits to that sort of thing?
Well, I'm a bit of a coffee geek, to be honest. So, which I got to give Dave Asprey a little bit of credit for getting me onto that, the purity of coffee, which I've since learned, you know, that they're, you know, tons of ways to do good in pure coffee. So I geeked out on that many years ago. And so the benefit of it is just it tastes really damn good, right?
Okay.
And that obviously it's clean beans, it's organic, it's without any, you know, toxins or anything like that, which you can buy many places today. It's kind of become a trend, even having in London, there's lots of nice coffee roasteries where you can go get your own beans and grind them yourself every morning. So it's just, it's a little bit of a luxury moment. We moved out from we lived downtown in Malmö in Sweden 10 years, my wife and I, and, you know, had the pleasure of just walking down the street and had a coffee shop, right? We moved out to this, you can't really see it, but I'm surrounded by woods here in a house we built. And just, it was one of those things that when you move out from the city, you want to have that little luxury of awesome coffee, right? So I just decided I'm going to teach myself how to do that. It's not difficult. It's just buy a pour over coffee, a filter. And I like to do it like really old style, just simple, classic pour over coffee. So
Very cool. I was in Indonesia a couple of years ago, and we went to like one of the top coffee bars, and they had everything. They had all these wonderful beakers, and they did the pour over coffee. I like that. So you've just mentioned nature, so I'm very keen to get stuck into that. Last question on coffee though: are you just having black coffee? Is there something in black. It? Okay, just black coffee. And the water. What was the benefit of the hydrogen water?
So I'm not the best to ask that question, honestly, in terms of the benefits of hydrogen-rich water, but it helps your cells absorb water better, basically, right? So that's your kind of supercharging your hydration doing that. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things we talk about in terms of structured water and all of that, which I think is a fascinating kind of avenue. But again, it's where I'm sometimes like, well, that's fascinating, but I'm not the best person to ask, but I definitely want to follow that field.
So sometimes you hear a couple of things and you think, I don't need to go that deep into it. I just know that intuitively it's good. Cause there was what's that documentary on Netflix? Down to Earth, I think, with Zac Efron. I don't know if you've caught that. There's a whole episode dedicated to water, and they go around and try all these different waters, and it just blew my mind because I just thought water was water until that point.
Anybody wants to feel like really hydrated, just go to the mountains, find a spring, and drink from that. Right,
yeah.
That's the kind of water you can get, and you really do feel it. Right, it's amazing. And anything you can do in your home to kind of mimic that, which I think is becoming more and more popular, the lots of water systems that will create structured water for you. There's some in Switzerland that is particular, what's it called? Ganda water, I think it's, or is it in Austria? I can't remember. So it's these kind of, losing my English here, but it's basically, it's a metal plate that's been kind of, it's been subjected to some waves or some rocks that's kind of, you know, so it's inheriting the vibrations from the rocks basically, and then that's kind of, you know, blasted onto the water from there.
It's cool, isn't
not
it?
Not very good explained.
It's very cool. No, I understand. It's when I was in South Africa years ago, we climbed one of the mountains for sunrise, and we ran out of water on the way back down, and it was so hot and we had headaches. And I was with a guy that was from there, and he's like, we'll go and drink from the stream. We'll drink from the rocks. And we were just sucking it. And I was like, I'm definitely going to get sick. I'm going to get really, and I didn't get sick, and the water tasted really good as well. So yeah, there was something to it.
Yeah, depending on where you are, you may want to filter that in terms of if there's some cows grazing next.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he knew it was clean because it was coming through the rocks, but yeah. Ordinarily I wouldn't recommend going and drinking random water. But yeah. So let's talk about nature then, because I think this, did you call it Nordic biohacking? Was that the term you used?
Yeah. Well, it kind of goes with that, you know, less is more. Right. Mm. It's also a little bit of the minimalistic, simplistic Nordic lifestyle that we live over here, where it's not about just getting more gadgets and getting more treatments and getting more supplements. It's about just maximizing what you already have access to. Right. So for me, that's eating as much green stuff I can find around me in my garden, at the farm down the road. And, you know, it's really just maximizing what is almost free. Right.
Yes.
Things like grounding, walking out in the grass bare feet every day, you know, at least 10, 15, 20 minutes, even in the winter. Mm-hmm. I know that's where a lot of folks will go, that's really cool, crazy stuff. Why would you do that? Well, there's a lot of reasons why I do it. A, it feels darn good. And B, you're kind of absorbing all the negative ions from the earth, which, you know, you need to have a well-balanced system, right? Mm-hmm. And lots of studies, although they are what I would say in the category of studies that are not 100% valid, because they're done by the people who truly believe in this, and they're not kind of, you know, all of them anyway. They're very few placebo-controlled double-blinded studies and all of that. But still, there's enough there for me with my science hat on, thinking this is interesting. Grounding makes sense, so I'm going to do it. Kind of like with the water. I trust enough of people around me, including some Danish pharma executives that I know, that are like, oh, this water thing, it's going to blow. In a couple of years, it's going to come. So, you know, we've got this little group called the Biohacker Lounge with some good friends of mine, Mass Fries and others, where we geek out on things like that. And there are some, I'm not going to mention their names here, but there are some really cool pharma executives from the Danish pharma industry, which is huge. And they're all like, oh man, that water thing, that's interesting. So if you think all pharma people are evil, think again. A lot of them are actually pretty smart cookies, and yes, they do know what's coming, right? So anyway, back to grounding, it's kind of like with the water. I trust various people that have convinced me that there's something to get from that, so I ground myself every day.
And just on the grounding then, because I recently watched, I think it's called the Earthing documentary or the Grounding documentary, which is really good. Do you ground your bed? Do you ground your desk? Is it just 10 minutes in the morning? How far do you go with the grounding?
So I do have a grounding mat that I'm standing on from time to time. I also have a grounding sheet, which honestly, I've not been able to continuously measure any benefits on my stress levels or sleep or anything like that. So I'm stopped using it, honestly. I feel I get what I need from just walking outside bare feet, which to me, again, it's about maximizing routines, right? So biohacking is all about creating strategies in life so you can deal with any situation. So for me, that's, well, I have my routine. Often I work from home, you know, I walk out into the garden. I've placed a kind of a home gym in our backyard, which is about 100 meters, you know, from here. So I have to walk that long stretch. On the way there, I'm crossing a balancing rope, and I'm going to do my pull-ups in the backyard. I'm going to walk back, and I'm going to do the same balancing rope there. So all of that, I mean, it's just part of a routine that I do. And I feel like that's enough for me. If you have a lot of inflammation, that's where most of the studies on grounding is done. More grounding than what I'm doing is beneficial. So,
makes sense. Yeah. And with the devices you had, were you plugging them into sockets, or were they going out the window and into the ground?
I plucked them in sockets because it's a fairly new house. We know that, and I tested the sockets. They're all properly grounded. So yeah. But you definitely want to test that. Otherwise, it's just, it may be wasting time and money on it.
Yeah. So. No, that's interesting. Cause yeah, I'm just getting into the whole grounding thing a bit more. Yeah. Okay. So a bit of grounding. And what else then? I guess you must be going into the forests and being surrounded by trees and nature. Yeah. Is that part of it as well? What are some of the benefits of that?
Well, so there's lots of studies on forest bathing, right? And how even 10 minutes in the forest will start to rejuvenate your immune system. And if you spend, I think it's 2 hours, you will see a massive boost of your immune system. So I do go for a lot of walks and runs. I mean, we are surrounded by forest here, so it's pretty easy. So yeah, I enjoy that. And I mean, anybody who's been in the woods more than half an hour will start to put a smile on their face. It's very hard to be depressed and sad when you're in the forest. And there's just something to it, and kind of all the micro pores and whatever in your nose coming up from the trees and the leaves and the air and whatever. It's just, it's all nice.
No, that is lovely, isn't it? And are you grounding when you're in the forest as well? Or is that different things at different times?
No. I usually just do it in the garden. When I'm in the forest, I go for a run, I go for a walk. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because the whole being in, I know that's like a Japanese thing, isn't it? But go forest bathing, it's kind of coined from those guys. Okay. So just half an hour could be enough just to reduce your stress levels if you're feeling a bit stressed.
I can't remember the exact details. I think it's after 10 minutes, you will start to, you can actually detect it in the nervous system. And I think it's half an hour, if around that time, you're really starting to see some kind of neurotransmitter changes as well. So, yeah. And then I think, is it 2 hours? That's the study that I've seen in the immune system reaction.
Yeah. And out of interest, do you take your phone with you? Do you leave your phone away? Is it on airplane mode? Does that make any difference when you're in the forest?
I do take my phone with me. Often it's going to go on airplane mode, but you know, I think that's another thing where I'm probably a very practical biohacker from that stance, that I fully respect people who feel that there is a benefit to turning off their phone. I fully respect that if you are sensitive to EMF, then that makes a lot of sense. And I'm not going to say that I wouldn't benefit from doing it myself as well, but I'm a busy guy, and this is probably one of the areas I could learn a lot in, right? That when I do walks, I'm often on the phone or I'm walking with my wife, and you know, at the end of that case, I don't use my phone, obviously. But if I'm walking or running, I have it with me, and so
I guess it comes back to that balance thing though, doesn't it? Because you could be running through the streets on your phone or you know, talking on the phone, but you're doing it in the forest, and there's probably like a pro and a con to that, isn't there? Because you've got the phone, but you're also in nature.
I do, like I seek those moments with total no distractions, right? So for instance, my morning routine, it's like my phone is on the other end of the kitchen table. I don't look at it, I don't touch it, right? When I go out and do my workouts during the day, my phone is left in the office. I don't bring it with me most days anyway. But so it, again, yeah, it's balance. It's about how do you maximize whenever you can? And that's where I think a lot of biohackers, they sometimes get a little bit of flack for that, because we are kind of seen as ultra performers that are just crazy. But in honesty, it's about finding moments where you are recalibrating, right? Because I back in the day, I was living from vacation to vacation to vacation. I needed to recharge in my vacations, and now I recharge every day, like throughout the day I recharge. So I'm never tired, I'm never stressed out at work anymore. I'm just like, I just balanced my life.
Nice. And you look fresh. Yeah, no, it seems like it's working. So let's talk a bit about gadgets then, because I can see, I think you've got an Oura ring on or similar. You've got that ball. Talk to me a bit about some of the gadgets that you're using and what works best for you and what you recommend to others.
So I've used a lot of gadgets through the years. I've put them away again. And when I talk about gadgets, which I do a lot, I talk about them as instruments for learning, basically. There's one gadget I continue to use, and that's my Oura ring, because it gives me my sleep score. We can debate the quality of that, but after 3 years of data, I get my trend. I know from an Oura perspective what makes up, you know, a good night of sleep for me. I have my bed routine, we can talk about that, but And it tracks my stress levels, right? And those two numbers, stress and sleep, that's kind of what I predominantly track. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of training with gadgets around heart rate coherence. And, you know, I've also kind of checked the Whoop strap out quite a bit and make sure that I'm continuing to use this rather than the Whoop just because of convenience. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of meditation training with the Muse headband. This mm-hmm. goes back 4 years when it was all new. I meditated 100 days with that, which taught me a lot. But now I don't need it anymore. Now I can meditate wherever I want to meditate. I don't mm-hmm. need a gadget to meditate. So I'm often teaching people that gadgets, it's okay if you put them on the shelf, if you've learned from them, and if you continue to do what they taught you to do, you know, and that's how I look at them. Then there is things like my red light panel over there, right? I use that obviously frequently. I don't put it away, but it's something that you continue to use as a gadget to really just energize your cells and your microcirculation, right? So there's a lot there. Gosh, what else am I using? I've used so many. Tested my blood a million times. I've tested my genes. I've tested everything you can test internally in your body, basically. I've done all of that and recalibrated my lifestyle from that data.
Can I ask you on the test? Sorry to interrupt. What would you say are some of the top tests? If I wanted to go to the lab tomorrow and just get my first panel done, what would be the kind of top things you say I'd recommend you look at these?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say you got to check your minerals. You got to check basic things like your vitamin D levels, right? It's a very simple test to do. Vitamin B, like B12 is something that a lot of people are, you know, luckily more and more people are realizing that that's important. Because we all synthesize B vitamins differently, right? And, mm-hmm. and depending on your genes, you may have a methylation that's kind of screwing up your utilization of B vitamins. Mm. That's my case. So I would definitely always recommend get a basic B vitamin panel test and just see where you're at on that. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you would want to get a genetic test and check for a few of those SNPs relating to methylation. Possibly worry about your cholesterol. That's another thing that if you ask most people, should I be worried about my cholesterol? I'm always like, are you inflamed? Mm. Not inflamed, then don't worry about it, honestly. That's okay. Where I'm at right now with cholesterol, which may be controversial. But inflammation would be another thing to get tested.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And things like testosterone, do you get those things tested?
I've done that, yeah. Mm. But it's not, again, it depends. And it's where I think the future is looking bright when it comes to recommending people what tests to do, because I could probably ask you 5 questions to hone in on. Should we check your hormones, right? Should we look for testosterone and whether that's actually low? Should we look for, you know, the balance between cortisol and DHEA and kind of how fatigued are you and all of that? But again, if you ask me what's the basics, I would say minerals, you know, it's your vitamins, and
yes.
Then ideally, obviously, the D vitamin is the obviously a vitamin, yeah. But you know, that's one of the very basic ones.
Yeah. Okay. No. Fine. Yeah. And because if you look at like the recommended daily allowance for vitamin D, it's quite low, isn't it? Compared to when I've been to some biohacker conferences and I speak to other biohackers and I understand they're taking a lot more than the recommended daily allowance.
Yeah, I do too. Reality is there's such a difference in country regulations here, and in Denmark, and you know, it's probably one of the lowest places in the world. It's been increased lately with COVID, with all the findings around how it affects our I guess risk of getting COVID, and yeah, in Sweden it's almost, I think, double that. In Germany, it's higher than it is in Denmark too. I think UK, you opted 5-6 years ago. So I can't remember the exact numbers, but yeah, it differs quite a bit. So remember that when you read about it, right? In your own panel from your own doctor in your local, wherever you're at in the world, you know, that may differ. So you got to dive into those numbers.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because half of my family's from Italy and half's from Ireland. So I guess the half that's from Ireland probably don't need that much sun. They've probably adapted through ancestry not to have as much sun as the Italian side. Whereas I think the Italian side maybe, I mean, good to get your thoughts on this, but I think maybe because I've got that Italian heritage, I probably need more vitamin D than if I was 100% Irish. I don't know. Yeah. What, any thoughts?
Well, I'm not a vitamin D expert by any means. But I would say it all depends on what you eat and how much time you spend in the sun as well, right? And I think Irish people tend to actually avoid the sun because they are always kind of pale and redhead, and there's just kind of, they easily get burned, which is an old other story about why that happens. Check Jack Cruz's work on all of that. But I would say Italians probably have more vitamin D naturally because they tend to walk out in the sun and get it naturally. Irish people don't, right? Because A, it's colder up there, and B, they easily get burned, and they probably don't know that they need to go out and get the morning sun to avoid getting burned, but that's a whole other story. So yeah, they should supplement more than the Italians. That's just kind of my logic thinking on it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've thought about it as well. Is maybe, oh no, sorry, no, I thought the other way around. I thought if I'm living in England where the sun is, I think probably I need more vitamin D because I've got the Italian heritage, and maybe they're used to having that higher level coming in all the time. And
yeah, but that's the whole epigenetics. You can have a set of genes, but if you're not exposing your genes to the right environment, then your genes kind of will screw you over. So you may be Italian of genetic, you know, disposition, but you know, if you're not triggering those, then you know.
Yeah. I spent a bit of time in Spain a couple of years ago, and my whole, I mean, there was a lot of things going on, but it just felt so good. I was walking every day in sunlight and. Yeah. Just, and then you come back here and you can't see now, but it's raining, there's clouds, you know, so it's a different thing. In Britain, yeah, sad but true stereotype there about the weather. Okay, I'm conscious of time. So what are your kind of, are there, when it comes to biohacking, are there a couple of particular things that you've really gone deep in? Are there areas that you're just more fascinated in than others that you spend more time understanding? Or is it more of just a general surface understanding of things? But are there a couple of things that have really drawn you in?
Breath is probably one. But I would say I'm a generalist, 100%. Mm. So I know enough about a lot of things, but I'm not an expert in many things. I'm an expert in my line of work, but from a biohacking standpoint, I'm probably not what will be classified as an expert.
Yeah.
So my top recommendation is, and you would love this, is obviously mining your breath work. And if we focus in on an area, it will be stress, because I came from that physical stress situation, and I've continue to understand how I balance my life to kind of gather the points I can gather during the day to make sure that I don't burn myself out over time. So I do a lot of things to make sure I activate my parasympathetic nervous system. So I do a lot of left nostril breathing, for instance, something I've geeked out a lot on lately. Spending a lot of time with various people, just trying to understand that, reading some studies from India and whatever, about how, you know, just as little as half an hour of left nostril breathing a day in 6 weeks can dramatically change your HRV, dramatically change your vagus tone, dramatically improve your long-term risk for cardiovascular disease, etc. So there's just a lot with breath, you know, which is under the umbrella of stress. And that's kind of what I'm focused on.
That's so cool. And is it? Are you going in through the left and out through the right?
I'm doing pure left nostril.
Okay.
I've geeked out with Lee Ewan, if you know him, a guy from Australia who's worked with Wim Hof for many years. Met him in Helsinki at the summit up there in November. And we kind of spent some time afterwards and been doing some podcasts and whatever. And he's invented this little, he may not have invented it, but he's certainly been refining the actual product of a little dilator, or whatever it's called. It's basically a little plastic thing you stick up your nose and you open up your nostrils to have more air coming through your nose. So that if you do mouth taping at night, then actually it's a little bit of an upgrade to mouth taping because you make sure that your nostrils are fully open. So we geeked out on blocking one of them, which we've done some prototyping on that, and it's pretty funny.
That's cool.
So yeah, I can recommend sleeping with a with right nostril blocked.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so you could use that particular device and just be working and constantly just breathing through one, your left nostril and not even have to consciously think about it. Oh, that's exciting. I like that. Yeah. I thought it was in through the left, out through the right. But if you're just stimulating.
So if you want to balance your nervous system, yes, that's a very good method to do that, right? And that's, I think, I'm often thinking about this. And again, I'm not an expert. I'm just kind of trying things out and seeing how I react to it. Balancing your nervous system through left-right alternate nostril breathing, good idea. Amazing. Yes. It works. It does calm you down, no doubt. But if you want to make sure that you're truly in a parasympathetic nervous system state or parasympathetic state, left nostril seems to be the way to go.
Yeah.
And there are some studies, as I mentioned, from the Indian Council of Medical Research that's on left nostril breathing.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Oh, so if somebody's feeling quite stressed right now, then they can actually absolutely just block off the right nostril.
A lot of people will see me on video during work meetings where I'm just kind of leaning my head like that.
Oh, and
trying to disguise what I'm actually doing. Yep.
Especially if you're in a stressful meeting and someone's stressing you out. It's like, yeah. Okay. No, thank you. I think you've just given us a real gift there. I've got to ask you, what's going on with the ball? What's that ball doing?
Well, kind of like the morning routine in the kitchen. I just, because I'm in my head all the time, I like using my hands. And so I'm doing all sorts of, you know, DIY things. You know, this is just like, yeah. And honestly,
fidget.
I used to do it with a pen, but people got it when I was on podcast that I just like clicking it. So
yeah.
I got this ball, which is a bit of a massage ball that I'm using on my foot and whatever.
Yeah. Just something to do with the hands and a bit of a distraction. Yeah,
when you use your hands, my mind is working differently than when I'm not using my hands. So
Cool. So let's just talk about a bit about bedtime routines then. So what does it look like for you in the evenings? Have you got the red light blockers on? Talk us through what happens as the sun goes down for you. What's that look like?
Well, unfortunately, and fortunately, depends on how you look at it, but I work a lot with the US, so I tend to sit on meetings online until 8, sometimes 9 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when the sun goes down, I will put on some light blue blockers. I'm not using the fully Bono style red blue light blockers.
Yeah.
I'm just using, you know, a very mild filtered version. Because I have tracked my sleep for 2,700 nights and I'm not seeing a significant increase in my sleep quality from blocking it. And we are, you know, obviously, again, N=1, biohacking rule number one, right? We are all unique. So some will have a huge benefit from blocking blue light. I have a benefit, but not as much. But I do try to, like, the last 2 hours before I go to bed, I have a mild blue blocking filter on. Sometimes I'll put on the full on blocking if you know, if I just feel like it, honestly. These glasses here are my daily glasses. They actually have a light blue blocking filter in them. So prescription glasses. So I do that. We always try to eat at least 3 hours before bedtime. Which can be difficult from time to time, but that's a kicker for me. If I eat too soon, too close to my bedtime, my heart rate is up, you know, my stress levels are up in my body. So yeah. And then alcohol, right? I do drink a lot of red wine actually, but I do it as early in the afternoon as possible. I'm a super fan of Blue Zones and all the work that's done in studying kind of the balance of a good life basically. Right. And red wine, just one glass of really good, nice, organic, preferable biodynamic wine. It really just kind of sets my day. So yes, I sometimes do drink before my work day end, but it's one glass and it's really just, it's chilling and it's got a lot of resveratrol and a lot of benefits from it as well. But that's it. But if I drink like social setting style, my sleep is screwed over. So yeah, alcohol, bad if you want to sleep well.
Yeah. And that food thing was a game changer for me because, when we were with my girlfriend and her family in Poland a couple of years ago, we would eat quite late into the night. And it's like, I feel so tired every day. And the minute I gave myself, I think I actually went to 4 hours in the end, 4 hours of before bed. And the sleep difference was ridiculous. It was so much better, so much more restful. So yeah,
absolutely.
People don't realize that, do they? They think you can have a midnight snack and go to bed and you really can't. You need to let that food digest. And okay. And any sort of meditation, breath work, anything like that at night?
So we put red lights in our bedroom behind me here. So when we kind of, you know, go to bed and kind of start that whole routine of, you know, brushing your teeth and whatever, walk into the bedroom and it's all just red light in there, which is a bit kinky, but that's what it is. We tend to dim the light in the bathroom a little bit, so we're just not exposed to all that white bright light just before bedtime. Obviously, I'm using a filter on my phone where I'm not seeing all the blue light there. And obviously, the glasses will take a degree of that. But we're also absorbing all the blue lights from our skin, basically. So it's not just the eyes you got to protect from that. And so, yeah, just easy, calm night routine. Very, very simple, actually. Nothing special. When I lie down in bed, I usually do a little bit of box briefing just to calm myself down. Sometimes I will do the left nostril, so I block my right nostril, depending on if it's been a stressful day. I'll kind of do that and just make sure that, and I can see on my data that in the early 2 hours of my sleep, my HRV is higher when I'm blocking the right nostril. So what happens is this, the thingy falls out during the night and you wake up without it, right? So you will get a little bit of a balancing breath through the night, obviously. And that's it. That's my night routine. I sleep within 2 minutes of laying down in bed.
Oh, that's fantastic, isn't it? That's a good sign that you're relaxed. Oh, Martin, that has been a real pleasure. Is it? If people want to know more about you and want to learn more, where can we direct them to?
So Instagram is probably the place I'm most active right now. So Martin Kremer is my handle on Instagram. And check out my TED talk that I did there in 2019. And I'm working with some really cool people right now, Nikolai Damgore and Jeanette Oxlin. We're doing a lot of corporate coaching, you know, really just microdosing biohacking knowledge to corporate clients, helping people to, I guess, remain resilient in this crazy time we all live in right now here in 2021. So that's, you know, what I'm doing at my nighttime besides my job. Check me out there, Martin Kremer, and you'll find more.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure to link below in the description to your TED talk and also to your Instagram. So guys, you can just scroll down below and find those links there straight away. But Martin, any last words from you? Anything we haven't covered you wanted to cover off, or have we covered most things?
Well, I just want to say thank you to you, because I think anything we can do to spread good knowledge, it's become one of my things. That's why I started the community as well in Denmark. It's like, you know, we got to spread all the good things that we're not talking about, and we got to be open, and we got to be, I guess, curious around what I call the new norm, which now is taken on by the COVID movement of the new normal, right? But new normal health is kind of what I started talking about years ago, that for me, you got to shift your mindset. And I mean, we can talk for hours about mindset shift towards you can own your own health, but you got to stop listening to everything that comes in at you and take control. That's what it's all about.
Own your own health, and you've given me a couple of real gifts. Some, you know, the jaw and the constant left nostril breathing. I can't wait to go and play with that. So thank you very much. Thank you so much for your time, guys. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you on the next one. Cheers, Martin. Cheers, everyone. Hey everybody, thank you for sticking right the way through to the end of this breathcast. I really hope you enjoyed the guest that we just had. If you haven't done so already, please like, subscribe, and hit that bell notification, because we've got so many more top experts and wonderful human beings coming onto this show, and I don't want you to miss any of those great conversations. So please do that, and that would be really, really appreciated. Just a couple of quick messages for me. If you haven't done so, please leave a comment and hit that like button. I read every single comment that goes onto this channel, and I do my best to respond to them. So you might have a question for me, maybe a question that you want me to ask to a future guest, or you just want to put something into the community, take a few seconds to do that. It helps the YouTube algorithm, and it's a way for us to connect as well. So I'd really appreciate it. Just a couple of comments. Anything that you've got would be absolutely great. I do have a second YouTube channel called Binaural Beats Unleashed. And if you haven't done so and you wanted to subscribe over there, it's completely free. I'm working with a number of artists at the moment to bring different binaural beats. It's essentially different frequencies that are able to help us get into different states. So for example, I use binaural beats to study when I'm building my breathwork courses. And I just go onto YouTube, type in binaural beats for study, pop in the headphones, and it just helps me get into state for the next few hours where I'm focusing, no distractions, there's no rap music going on. I can just crack on and get stuck into something and not be distracted. But you can also use binaural beats for meditation, mindfulness, yoga. People use them to help them get to sleep.
They want to use them to kind of get them into a different state. Freeform breath work is another great thing. You can put on an hour's binaural beats track. You just lay down. Just bring some awareness to your breath. See how you're breathing. Maybe you want to alter it in some way. Maybe do some stretching. You know, so there's some wonderful things there. So help me grow that community. Please pop on over, hit that subscribe button. I'd really, really appreciate it. And we'll grow another way for us to connect. I'm on Instagram, takeadeepbreath.co.uk. If you could hit that follow button on there, that would be ace. There's loads of content that we're putting on there. Try and cut clips up and just have, you know, another way for you to digest some wonderful information about breath work, breathing exercises, and information from our top experts. Sometimes we don't have an hour to watch a whole breath cast, so I'll do my best to maybe get a 3 or 4 minute clip together just to give some information. Go, oh, that I forgot that, or I didn't know that particular thing about breathing. So yeah, takeadeepbreath.co.uk on Instagram. And finally, I've taken some of the top breathing exercises from this channel, and I've converted them into MP3s and just put them in a little MP3 store, and the link is below. For $4 or $5, you can own one of these breathing exercises forever, ad-free. If you're going somewhere, you're not going to have Wi-Fi, you want to turn your phone onto airplane mode, that's yours. You keep that. There's no ads. And $4 or $5 just comes my way to support the channel and the breathcast. So hopefully it's a bit of a win-win. You get an exercise for life and we get a couple of dollars to help us keep going. So that's it. So thank you so much. We will see you on the next breathcast or breathing exercise. If you're here for a breathcast and now you're thinking, what should I do next? Maybe it's worth trying one of our breathing exercises. I'm going to link to a couple of them now so you can try those breathing exercises, or maybe you want to check out another breathcast like this one. So we'll there we go. Thank you so much. Take care. Cheers.